I went to a concert last night. It was the music of Tchaikovsky, which most of you know. And we were listening to the love theme from Romeo and Juliet amongst his own autobiographical symphony 4. One of the insights that my wife had during this concert was fascinating. And I want to share it with you because I feel that it is relevant to what we do. And I feel that it is important for us to understand. What I find fascinating about that concert and about her insight is the how it affected her. Because I didn't feel the same way she felt. I wasn't listening to the same things. What I was looking at was how the composer in orchestral music must pick how many instruments there will be in each section. For example, if he wants to have just plain violins with a lot of volume at one point, he might make 12 violins, and he may have, for example, 4 cellos or 3 cellos. In that way, he creates kind of like a capacity to mix it, because it's not exactly the same to just play louder. Because if you play louder, you change the tone quality on the instrument. So when you have more of them playing a certain tone quality, it becomes louder to the audience. So the same is there for horns, the same is there for the large upright basses, which are bowed to. So he picked a certain number of each instrument so that he would have a range to work with, even though sometimes they played very lightly. But even when they played like with their picking it instead of, or strumming it instead of bowing it, the volume was absolutely perfect. So here I was thinking about the mechanics of it, and I was thinking about even how the sheet music is written, because they have to turn the pages of the sheet music. So the musical phrase that they're playing has to fit on the page that's facing them. Otherwise, if they're in the middle of a very, very fast and fancy thing and they have to turn the page, they got to go, oops, and turn the page. So whoever is giving the music to these people is doing it in such a way that they turn the pages according to their own instrument. And I was watching that too. The cello people turned their page differently than the horn people in the back. And the conductor, he had trouble in the rehearsals with his audience because of the getting, not with his audience, with his orchestra, because they would sometimes lag. They would sometimes be a little slow. Especially in the theme of Romeo and Juliet, which requires this incredible precision of how the violins, for instance, would come in and how they would express, because it had to be just exactly so, a split second after something else. So he was like pushing his arm very fast and grabbing them, practically grabbing them and telling them, come on now, and you, and now, come on now, and super cool. So here I am watching all these dynamics. And I was watching how the orchestra was interacting with the conductor, how the conductor was expressing, how the musicians were concentrating, and how they were trying to get the dynamics of the music, the volume, the intensity, the whole thing was very incredibly sensual, which you would expect from Tchaikovsky. So she's looking and she's seeing something totally different. And after the concert, she told me about it, and I was like, "Gee, I wish I had thought about that also during the concert." She said that everyone chooses an instrument to express themselves through. In other words, each person picks the means, the tools, the instrument by which they express themselves. She was using it in terms of horses and riders, because she's very much into horses. And she was saying that the rider has this instrument, the horse. The horse is the instrument through which the rider expresses the mastery they have in their art of riding. And it's definitely a mastery. It's definitely a mastery. It's something which they it's something which they understand from many, many years of practice. Something which they do after long periods of work at it. And their horse is their instrument. They are playing the horse. On riders, they do it in a very interesting way. The horse and rider, when they are attuned, the rider is usually sitting very securely on the seat of the horse and is holding the reins very lightly, but very consistently. And the horse understands this state. The horse understands this state by which the rider is expressing. And the slightest change in the rider's holding of the lead, of the reins is immediately perceived by the horse. The slightest change of the where the feet are, where the knees are, where the thighs are, there is a complete synchronicity, a resonance, harmonic resonance. And with horses, it's so because they move in wave patterns as they're, because that's the way they are. They have to coordinate with four legs. And the only way to do that when they are moving is to have a harmony between their legs, because everything has to be synchronized very nicely according to whether they are walking or trotting or cantering or running. It's a step-by-step harmony. So horses always feel that kind of harmony, and anything that goes out of harmony disturbs them. So the rider has to be in harmony with the horse. The horse then, because of the harmony, feels the rider, because they're in tune, both of them, horse to rider, rider to horse, and the slightest change in the hands, the slightest change in the shifting of the weight and so on, this affects the movement of the horse. And since the rider is the master in this situation, the horse is the instrument. The instrument is just as important as the player. If the instrument has defect, if the instrument has problems, if the instrument is out of tune, or the instrument is physically broken, you will not have that harmony. So, therefore, you know, you're moving around, it's going some kind of ch-ch-ch. Yeah, I hear it. So there's like this harmonic resonance between the player and the instrument that is played. Now, what is actually happening in this? She looked at it as the individual, whoever they are, in whatever they do, using something as an instrument through which they reflect themselves. Well, the most obvious instrument is the body. Your body reflects you. Now, a lot of people understand that. For example, people who are very much into fashion, they look at clothes as a expression of who they are. After all, really good fashion designers have to know the hue of the skin and the color of the dress or the color of the suit has to be complementary. Because if the color of the skin, the hue of it even, is different in a way which is clashing, no matter how nice your clothes, they will not work because of the skin color, the skin tone. Or the shape, if one is a little bit bigger in shape and the type of clothes amplify that, that doesn't work. So there are many people who express themselves through their clothing. Of course, you have to have the money to do that. Others express themselves through their cars or their motorcycles. They have real fast ones, they have real powerful ones, or they have real money-saving ones or ecological ones. They drive an expression of their feeling. So you get the point. But our bodies are also the same way. Our bodies express ourselves. And now when you're aware of that, it's very different than when you're not. I once had a conversation with somebody who's now deceased, unfortunately, but he had lived in Italy for some time, many years. And Italians, as you might know, as you might see, they tend to talk with their hands. They express themselves with body language. Italians like to express themselves bodily along with the words because it's an entire, their expression includes all of them. So their expression is the body, the words, the hands, the motions, the innuendos, the way in which you turn and so on. It's very expressive. Well, this person was not actually Italian, not at all, but he had lived in Italy. So he was using hand things that he saw. He had adapted hand motions that he saw others using. And once he talked to me with his hands in this such a way, I was so insulted. I couldn't listen to one word he was saying. I basically stood up and said, "You're the rudest person I've ever met." Basically, I told him to something or other. And he was like shocked. But he was saying, I was saying something nice. I said, "Are you kidding me? You idiot." And I walked away. Later on, he came up to me and he said, "You know, you actually understand those things. And I don't. And I inadvertently said something with the hands that was totally opposite." Anyway, we worked it out. But it's very important. The expression, how you make the expression, how the expression is done, because it's part of you. Now, a lot of people don't think about that. It's not part of who they are. It's not part of their consciousness. So they act in a way which is out of sync with their energy, their personality, their consciousness, their expression of selfhood. They are not really in connection with this energy of the self and how it manifests in this world. I know there are some people who like to write or speak, but they do it almost entirely from the left brain. It's a very rational process. An intellectual process, one which is calculated. Now that's a very important word, calculated. In other words, it's presented according to a systematic methodology, a plan that should lead to an expected result. It's calculated. It moves from here to there. Now, such kinds of presenters, whether it be in written form or even video form or spoken, they don't become very successful. And the reason is because their expression doesn't have that pizzazz, that thing we call charisma, that zit to it, that spark, that thing that catches you. If you think about, for example, energetic thought forms, when you have a powerful thought about somebody, usually something negative, and there's so much energy behind it, and you're just projecting it on somebody, it's got great power when you project it, because the thought and the feeling, and you notice here I'm making my hands in such a way, especially for those who are only listening, between my right brain and my heart. It's a thought with the feeling projected or injected like a projectile. It's just shot. So that has power because the expression, generically speaking, the expression and the power behind the expression have joined to create an energetic pattern of communication which very powerfully hits the intended target. So how you intend and what you intend is as important as the expression you wish to make. So if you really don't want to express yourself, then whatever expression you make will not be in tune with your own energy. I mean, maybe it will be accidentally, coincidentally, by the way, tangentially. You may find that naturally you will sometimes express what you are, because it is what you are after all. But it's not like a conscious thing. Why would somebody not want to express themselves? What's the most obvious reason? Fear. They're afraid of it. I don't want to express myself because either I don't want you to know, or I don't even want me to know. I had some interesting possibilities just recently where I was able to have discussions with people who really don't want to know themselves, who have a fear to do so, who are repressing. They don't want to know. And they may say they do. They may even act as if they do sometimes. But their overall pattern of activity is a statement, I don't want to know. It's interesting in such people because sometimes they're sending out an energy to others so that the others, if they have any brain, will know. That's really fascinating. They are saying things which are disconnected. They are making expressions which, of course, are intelligent, naturally, very rational, very intelligent, very spectacularly analytical. But they are hiding in their expression because they are not actually connected to themselves. So then, in some cases, their energy will cry out, see me, feel me, understand me, help me, have compassion on me. That's like the child within we speak about. The child within is calling out, not necessarily child. This energy within is calling out, help me, do something, connect. We say child because, after all, the child is very connected. The child has not yet learned to repress. So we say the child within because it's that pure expression of energetic consciousness, not the rational, analytical, logical or even physically mastered expression of consciousness, but rather the unfettered, unbiased, not distorted expression of self. So we say child within. So isn't that fascinating that you will have somebody expressing verbally and expressing energetically in two totally different ways? I've seen that sometimes in discussions with people. It becomes very complex. I mean seriously complex. Seriously complex because if you think about it, how does one who is aware listen to this communication? How does an aware person listen to this exchange? So I find myself doing a lot of listening. And when the energy says, say something, I offer something. I offer something in such a way that the energy and the intellect can meet each other again. I'm like saying, here you are, brain, say hello to your heart. You'll find that you have a lot in common. And so it's very difficult to have that conversation because you're hearing words and you got to keep pace with the words because otherwise you lose the whole conversation. And you're feeling communication and you have to keep pace with that because otherwise you lose everything. And what's happening is that you're having to deal on two platforms at the same time. And if you add other people into this conversation, good God, it becomes very complex. Makes one simply want to go in one's room and lock the door. It's just too wild. You got too much happening here. Now, in that case, it's very fascinating how we communicate. And even more fascinating, the when we say everybody chooses an instrument to express themselves through which they wish to express, we are really saying something very constitutionally, fundamentally, and axiomatically significant. Because in our position here in this realm of physicality, the axiomatic truth of it all is energy, pure energy, energy of self. I don't even need to use the word spiritual because I'm not trying to contrast it with something material. I'm talking about pure energy, which is common in all realms, everywhere. That pure energy that is being, that pure energy that is essence and nothing more. That axiomatic truth is that essence has met this realm that we're in. And the axiomatic truth is that essence must express itself. Perhaps it will only express itself when you're in a vegetative state through the autonomic nervous system, which keeps your heart pumping, keeps yourself breathing, and so on. So this axiomatic truth, which we live with, it's the basis of our existence here. What's happening is that we must express and that we do choose our instrument. A lot of people have talked about when we're in this in-between period between the death in the last lifetime and the birth in this one, that we engage in a dialogue. And this makes so much sense. I mean, the other ideas that you die and boom, you go somewhere and that's it, or you die and boom, you simply fly to another place impersonally without any discussion, is not according to the way you would expect any intelligent, caring, compassionate person would work with you to help you grow. considering that punishment is not the point. Punishment doesn't even work in this lifetime, not in the way it's intended. That's another discussion. We've done it before. Now, in that in-between life, we choose in an interactive environment a vehicle, an instrument through which we can express what it is we must express to make the next steps we must make in our ever-continuing journey of evolution as we process life. I'm not saying you can choose to live, you know, like a movie star. There has to be some kind of reason for it. You can choose to not struggle if you've had a real hard lifetime. But the choice is in an interactive discussion with those who care about you and have your best intentions in the long term at heart, so that you will transform on that very basic level where you make choices, where the energy desires, where the energy chooses, you, the self, the personality chooses to change those desires, change those choices, to modify them in such a way that you will evolve to be the greatest version of yourself that you can be. It's an ongoing process, step by step. So the body we are in can be seen as our chosen instrument. For whatever reason, it is very valuable for us to figure out the reason that we are in this body, that with these challenges that we have, these obstacles that we have, it is very, very valuable. And the reason it's so valuable is because it helps us. It assists us to accomplish fundamental modifications in our living process, the way in which we go through events that transpire moment by moment in life. Now, this body has challenges. You can see it as a problem, as a bummer even. This is a bad thing. I hate it. I'm not saying you have to love it. It's possible that your aversion to something, your hatred of something, is part of the process of modification. I'm not saying you should just love everything about your body. It's kind of like becoming some kind of a vegetable that just simply loves everything and say, oh, I love my body, I love everybody, I love, you know, without any consideration of how you really feel. You can say it, of course, you can try to feel it. But when it's tested, it's kind of like when you don't want to speak to somebody, you just sit there and you go, no. And then they come up and they go, talk to me, blah, blah, blah. And they keep poking you, shaking you. They insist you respond. And then you're forced to. You've been tested. Your patience has gone. You have to do something about it, because you feel powerfully. So just being happy with everything, it's not realistic. Part of the process of modification requires challenges, requires these opposing forces, especially when something is very much out of balance in life. Opposing forces come to drag things towards the middle. Balance occurs when everything works out and there's a kind of a middle equilibrium here. A middle balance. And so therefore, these challenges are counterbalanced and worked out to create balance. And this is a very important part of life. And if you don't have that, your life is not really worth living, because there's nothing happening in it. You're just going through, you know, the usual eating, sleeping, mating, defending jazz. without challenges that, yeah, sure, that's correct. But when you are challenged and you have to deal with these challenges to evolve, that's very valuable. Now, here's another point. When you have chosen your instrument, your body, but your body in and of itself is to a certain extent limited in expressing the self. I mean, after all, I can, unless I'm very erudite, very capable of expressing how I feel, because I'm very aware of how I feel, or I understand it very well, and I have the capacity to analyze it very well, and I also have the capacity to express it very well. Unless I have that capacity, even speaking doesn't do it all the time, because it's not really reflecting how you feel, or it's not really reflecting who you are. And even if you are so erudite and so capable, it doesn't necessarily mean you'll be able to, with words, express that part of yourself which is beyond words or in another dimension from words, as in feelings. Descriptions of feelings and feelings are very different. One is a verbal expression, the other is an intense experience or whatever, kind of an experience. Speaking is also an experience, but you know what I mean. One is on one side, one is on the other. Now, this, the body, of course, some people can express physically. People who play football, for instance, are expressing their passion, their determination, their strength, their skill, their coordination, their teamwork, and so on. It really is an expression of their feeling because they are very physically connected. But I was in a store yesterday in Gainesville. I don't know if you know it, but Gainesville is a very famous sports town. I mean, you're there? Sports, athletics. I mean, in the last, let's say, 5 years, they've won like 4 different national championships. That means the whole country. It's really a focused athletics town. So a lot of the people who live here are former athletes of various kinds. And in the store I was in, there were these monster guys, you know, shoulders out to here, arms like that, legs like this. But they were older. You see them in different stages of decay, I call it. Those who are kind of younger, they still look good, but they're starting to get a belly. Those who are a little older are enormously huge in all places. Because even though their body was honed as an instrument by exercise, by working out, by practicing, they were training and training and training. They became so incredibly powerful, physical machines to accomplish incredible athletic tasks. Now they're older. They may have to sit in an office typing. They may have to do simple things. And they're not as active. Their body is no longer the expression of the self. And naturally what happens? It just goes into decay because they've lost the connection to it. They're no longer connected to their body in the same way. So they get fat, they get huge, they get filled with pain, and a lot of times they have horrible arthritis or horrible physical bone problems and so on because of the abuse they took when they were doing the athletics. It's just not easy to be an old athlete. You can see it also on horses, that when they get old, they're very unhappy. Like, my wife's horse is a former regional champion in the United States. Big time horse. We got him practically as a gift, old. Now, when he can't express himself physically as that champion he is, and he really has that attitude, when he walks into the ring to do some performance, and you know, during a competition, he is happy. He says, I'm here, I'm Wes. I'm the champion, Wes. Here I am, ready to ride. Go, do it. Do it, master. Let's do it. And when he does really good and she congratulates him, he's like, yeah, yeah. I'm the horse. I'm the champ. He's got pride because that's the way he's expressing his energy. Of course, when he can't, he's too old. His arthritis is coming back. He has all kinds of physical problems. He's so depressed because he can't use his vehicle. He can't use his instrument to express what he is, or at least how he feels as he is in this particular circumstance. But that's all that counts, isn't it? If you consider the moment, if you consider the unfolding existence, the unfolding reality of every moment, all that counts is the vehicle and instrument you're playing right now. Because if it doesn't, you're not playing that instrument properly. You're not connected to the moment properly. You can't sit in the orchestra and play the violin and not be connected 100% to what you're doing. There are hundreds and hundreds of notes on that one piece of paper in front of you. And it's moving fast. I mean, Tchaikovsky. So fast. I mean, how do you write it down? It's not like just a line of notes. It's all over the place. How do you write it down? I mean, so many notes. And how do you look at it? You got to be totally focused. You can't be thinking that you didn't feed your cat. You have to be so focused at every second on every little note and play it practically as an automaton. Of course, with feeling, a feeling automaton. You know, a robot. Because you've got to directly translate those notes that you're seeing directly to finger. It has to go from paper to finger. Brain can't be involved. Paper to finger. And this hand too, you know, you got to go to the different strings, you got to bow it this way, that way, all over the place. Complete focus. So, how do you express yourself? What is the way you express yourself? What is the vehicle? What is the instrument through which you express yourself? If you don't have one, you better get one. You may say, well, why? Because if you're not expressing yourself, then what are you expressing? Simple question. You may say, why do I have to express myself? But my question is, if you're not expressing yourself, well, what are you expressing? Okay, who are you expressing? Are you imitating some rap singer? Are you imitating a movie star? Are you imitating someone in the TV or someone in your school? Somebody in your religious institution? Are you imitating them? Are you expressing in the way you think they would? Or even worse, are you expressing in a way you think they would want you to? That last one is even more abstract. It's one thing to act like somebody else. It's quite another to act according to how you think they would want you to act. First of all, you have no idea in reality how they want you to act. They may tell you how they want you to act. Of course, they might want to restrict you or whatever. That's another thing. But you have to feel yourself so that you can express the self. Okay, maybe in cooperation with others, maybe in a framework that others have created, like in your job. But that's not really expressing the self. That's a labor. Let's say in your family or whatever, there has to be an arena within which you express yourself. Otherwise, your whole life is an expression of something different than yourself. Just think about it. If you're not expressing yourself, then who are you expressing? What are you expressing? How terrible is that? To lead a life where you do not express yourself. I don't just mean tell people how you feel. I don't feel good today. I'm upset today. I'm angry today. That person said this about me. That person. I'm not talking about that. Or I feel great. I feel well. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about expressing the self. That energy, personality, the spirit. And I don't mean in terms of spiritual. I mean the spirit that you are. The passion of you. Your passion. Your sensual expression. That which is you. Okay, now I'm expressing that which is me. It's not going to be the same for you. You can't go out and start, you know, especially if you're a quiet person or you'd rather express yourself through art. You'd rather take your spiritual energy. Again, I use that word, sorry. You'd rather take your energy and just paint it into that beautiful expression. You can't paint yourself. I don't mean you can't put color on your body. I mean to say you can't paint yourself. It's not like you can make a painting and it's yourself. You can express yourself through painting, through expressing how you feel artistically. You can express yourself through music. You can express yourself through writing and composition. You can express yourself through your words. You can express yourself by caring about others, by healing others. You can express yourself by being a mother. You can express yourself by being a father, by being a friend. But you must somehow express yourself. Otherwise, you're cheating yourself. Unless you express self, you are cheating yourself. Because self wants to express. If you say self does not want to express, that is an expression of fear. There is love, there is fear. In fear, you don't want to express self. Why? I'm afraid that people will find out how I really am because I'm not good enough or I'm bad. I don't want to express myself because they will trample me. They will step all over me. I do not want to express myself because I'm afraid for various reasons. You never could express yourself when you were a child because your parents restricted you. You never could express yourself in various ways. I understand all this. It's a very significant thing. But that's all based in fear. And you consider in that fearful situation how other people feel about you as more important than how you feel about you. Let's get serious for a second. Of course, we've always been serious in this discussion, but honestly speaking here, if how others feel about you is more important than how you feel about you, you are living their life. Because you're living a life to have them feel about you. You're living a life of their feelings. Do you realize how insane that is? What you should care about is how you feel about you, how you are. And those who are around you can either accept it or not. They can like it or not. I've always told people, since I've started whatever I've been doing for so many years now, hey, if you don't like what I'm doing, don't listen. I'm expressing my essence, how my essence interacts with existence. This is the entire basis of spirituality. My essence, being, That is, my unique energy is expressing in reality at every moment. If you resonate with that, if you harmonize with that, you're invited to join in when it's appropriate to do so. If you don't like that, it does not resonate with you, fine, do something else. Don't hang out with me and cause dissonance. I'm going to express me. I'm not very concerned about how you judge that. I am concerned. Well, I am really concerned, especially in these broadcasts or when I'm speaking or when I'm together with others, how I'm relating with you in such a way that this is a positive interaction. Win-win, you're getting something from me. We're feeding each other in the interaction, just like when we play music and the audience is responding and so on. It's a very important thing to me, but your judgment of it is not. When it's working for us, great. When it's not, what can I say? I can't live your life. I can't live to please you. I will try to help you. I will try to do things for you. Yes, all that stuff. And if you're pleased, that's fine. But I don't have to modify what I am and the expressions I make of what I am, which is quite fundamental, to satisfy you. I will express what I am, and I will care about it, and I will modify it from that platform onwards. In other words, I have my process of expression, and what I talk about and how I talk about it will naturally, in this process, reach out to you and wish to make an interactive environment which is mutually beneficial in a win-win situation. But I'm not going to transform what I am so that you will feel good about me. If I do that, I'm living your life, not mine. Do you understand this point? It's all about the expression of self. Expression of self is fundamental. It is that which makes us interact appropriately. And that word is really important. Appropriately. Compatibly with our present environment. Compatibly doesn't necessarily mean that everything runs smoothly. It means that it's appropriate to the task, to the modification, to my evolution, that I shall evolve. That's a process. That's a growth. So the evolution, the advancement, the development, even if it's in a way which is in opposition or causes some internal conflict or whatever, if it serves my evolution, it's compatible with my environment. That's a very unusual way to put it. Usually people talk about go with the flow and they speak of it in terms of going together with it. I'm saying that even if it's in opposition with it, if that's compatible to your environment, it's perfectly appropriate. The trick is to have enough an analytical capacity to know when that's actually happening, to understand what is compatible. And the way you do that is by knowing the self. Know thyself. Consider self as most important. That's not selfishness in the sense of greed or in the sense of self-centered or in the sense of being insensitive or inconsiderate. It's a different thing. It's self-aware, self-reliant, self-situated, to be really strongly in tune with self respect of self, love of self, appreciation of self, acknowledgement of self. And from that platform, engage in every moment using instruments, whatever they may be, related to the body or the mind or whatever, words or music or art or cooking, horses, athletics, childcare, teaching, whatever. Just being a kind person who helps others. Because when you know the self, you can express the self according to the way that is most relevant, that connects to you in the best way. Like for me, music does sometimes. Sometimes it does not. Sometimes I look at my instrument and I say, I have no interest in you. You do not express me right now. Yet when I'm into it and I like that as an instrument and I'm playing, it's really, it does express me. But sometimes it's like out of tune with me. Me and guitar out of tune. I've been out of tune with keyboards for years now. They don't express me. They never have it really expressed me. Of course, yeah, that sometimes I play, it goes into this fairy mode. Yeah, okay, that does express me sometimes, but sometimes I don't feel like that. When I do feel like that, okay. When I don't, no. I have to know me, know how I feel and what it is I really want. And not just feelings that, like, I feel good, I feel bad, I like, I don't like. But I mean, really, honestly, the expression of that churning energy inside, that is the platform within which that evolution is taking place. And I'm just like experiencing that dynamo within, that turbine within, which makes me what I am, makes that life what I am, and just gives me that power to be. And when I'm aware of it, I know today I want to do this, or right now I want to do that, or I don't feel like I'm expressing myself properly. I'm frustrated. I need a vehicle. I need something. I'm searching for it. I'm looking for it. That looking, that searching is very much a part of life. Very much a significant factor in evolution. Very, very important, that seeking out, because when you stop seeking, when you don't care anymore, when you think you have nothing to express, you are simply opening the door to death, because all you're waiting for is to die. Do you honestly think it will be different? I'll give you the example of Les Paul. You probably don't know who Les Paul is, but I'll tell you. He's the inventor of the electric guitar. He's the inventor of multi-track recording in music. Factually speaking, he's one of the most important people in music history. And he's also a great guitar player, but he had incredibly serious arthritis in his right elbow. And the doctor said that the only way to resolve the incredible pain and the incredible situation he had was to fuse the elbow so there was no more motion. When there's no more motion, he would be able to be freed from that incredible pain. So he chose to have his elbow fused like this so he could hold a pick to play guitar. So his arm was fused like this in the later years of life. And he would play by moving his arm and moving the hand, the wrist, to pick. He chose. The most important thing for him was that instrument, that expression. And even late in life, he was doing live concerts in clubs. He chose it. He was aware of it. He knew and accepted it. That's just an example. Now, the theme of this lecture has been everyone chooses an instrument to express through. Everyone has a way that is for them, that works for them to express what they are. And if you don't have it, find it. Maybe you express yourself through playing ping pong. I don't know. I don't care. It doesn't matter how you do it, just as long as you do it. And when you stop doing it or don't even think of doing it, you're simply sliding to death. There's got to be that passion. There's got to be that sensuality that fuels the expression. And when you do that, you'll always be young. You will not age, because your energy will always be vibrant. Your energy will always be alive. It will always find expressions. Okay, you may get gray hairs and you may have physical problems that old people have. Okay, that's another thing. But your energy will not be old. No one will look at you and say, oh my God, that's an old guy. Okay, there's a point at which when the body so depresses us that we can no longer express. Okay, sure. That time is the time to be old, but not now. The time now is to always express that vibrant dynamo that is the heart. And if you feel that I don't have anything in life I feel like that about, I don't care anymore, I've just given up, you're in trouble. And if you want to get out of that trouble and take yourself away from the pit of death, care about the self first. Know the self first. Find the way that that self will express. And save your life. We're back. I have two very interesting questions. Also, if you'd like to give me feedback on the English-only broadcast quality, I know the English-Russian is green. I know it. My fault. And next week it will be fixed. This is an ongoing process. It's difficult. But next week it'll be better, I promise. A lot of very interesting comments here. Okay. Do you want me to answer your question here or elsewhere? Maha has asked me something which is very, very good. And the reason it's very, very good is because I think it's very, very relevant. And now you know who asked it, so it's no longer anonymous, but don't worry. He says that he, since becoming very aware, or since making big steps to becoming very aware of his personal interests, to allow himself to feel awareness of the self and of his feelings, he has found himself on a never-ending search of that which would be interesting enough to engage in. In other words, the life is a way to fulfill his own curiosity about it. And then he says, if I were to judge myself, I would then blame myself for being an egoist. But I don't see it as I'm an egoist. I really think that I'm just always renewing my interest in life. Does it mean that I'm stuck in my evolution and I'm an escapist? What I think is interesting about this question is that it's actually been asked by others in different ways. Well, this particular theme relates to guilt. Guilt. If I care about me, if I live my life, I'm guilty. I'm guilty for not caring about others, for not living my life for the sake of others. I'm guilty of selfishness. Is this not the idea that's behind it? This is the idea. I'm not saying it's right. I don't believe it's right at all, but I'm just quoting it. That my life is meant for the sake of others. How I live my life is judged in the arena of others. And I'm guilty because I'm caring about myself, that I'm living my life to fulfill my curiosity of it. What does that mean, curiosity? It means experiencing. Listen to this. I'm experiencing my life. I'm experiencing myself. I'm fulfilling my research about life, myself. And I'm guilty. What kind of madness is this? You're doing exactly what you're supposed to do. You're experiencing, you're working out your life from your perspective, and you're filled with guilt. This is the madness of society. And even if you were to speak to others about it, most people, honestly, would say, hey, there's nothing wrong with what you're doing. And what's hysterical about them saying it is they're saying it because they feel there's something wrong with it in themselves. But because they're living for the sake of others, they're telling the other person, there's nothing wrong with it. Go for it. Lock us all up in a madhouse, a mental asylum. We are eager to encourage each other to live our lives, to experience, to connect to the self. But when we do it, guilty, because we are not doing it for others. We are living vicariously. We are living other people's lives. We didn't do that when we were children, or young children. But we started doing it when we started interacting with other children. When we started watching TV, when we started seeing examples, we started to warp our consciousness into this insane position of approving everyone else to do what we disapprove in ourselves. This is a serious disease. Do you get it? There is nothing, it's not that I even have to say there's nothing wrong. It's all right. You know that already because you would tell that to someone else. You would tell it to someone else. So you already know it's all right. So me answering the question doesn't mean a damn thing. Because I'm just another person telling you it's all right. And you listen to it and you go, yeah, right. But you don't believe it. Now, what is it going to take for you to actually believe it's all right? I don't know. I honestly do not know. It's something you've got to work out. It might even be one of those things that's important in your evolution. Of course it is. Of course it is. Does that help? I think it's so cool, this theme. It's so psychologically relevant. And actually, it's spiritual because it's driving the entire connection to self. You want to be self-realized? Well, then realize you can experience life. Very similar. But we've talked about this a lot. Okay, now, here's another one, a really cool, I'm getting really great comments here. So here's another one of those questions. My question is about the dynamo that drives expression. I've noticed in me that I feel this dynamo, I feel this energy there, only when I'm in the company of certain persons. And it worries me because when I'm not with those persons, I don't feel like even living. I lose the desire to live. Okay, well, let's just stop right there for a second. First of all, we've already talked about this in the lecture, that what is it that you feel expresses you that keeps that dynamo going? Okay, in your case, being with certain persons. All right, now, when you're not expressing the self, what does it mean? You're sliding to death. So, it's necessarily that it follows, it necessarily follows that when you're not with these persons who give you that feeling of the capacity to express, you don't feel like living. That's natural. It's the same exact thing again, you see. Now, the question is really, well, is there another solution? In the sense that, why is it, am I stuck? Why am I stuck in this situation where I find my vitality, I find my force, so to speak, with these people? Is there another way to get it in some other way? Well, some people are people. All of their passion, all of their enthusiasm comes from dealing with people, working with people, being with people. That's okay. Nothing wrong with it. But if you think it only happens when you're with that one person, I would say that is another form of attachment, illusion, danger, because you've gone and said, I only feel it with that person. And I can't be with that person for some reason, so I just want to die. I'm exaggerating it, okay, just to make a point. And I know a lot of people who feel like that, and the person that they think is the one that makes them feel alive is someone they can't be with. They choose a person they can't be with. And they know that when they're with them, they feel really good. They feel alive. They feel the energy. They feel the dynamo. But they also know they can't be with them. Now think about that. They can't be with them, yet they're the only person they can be with. Okay, everybody, what kind of behavior do you call this? Anybody, scream at me. Oh, do I hear self-destructive? Oh, that's what you hear? Self-destructive behavior? Do I hear a second, a third on that? Yeah, of course, everybody. Self-destructive. Create a situation that cannot be fulfilled and then find yourself utterly destroyed because of it, even leading to death. That's the definition of self-destructive. How you destroy self, that's up to the time of day and the blowing of the wind. It changes, it's no problem. But you've chosen this marvelous way of saying, I only feel good with them, but I can't be with them, so I'll just die. Bye-bye. So there's nothing to be confused about. This is not a confusing situation. It's a very clear situation. Now, if it's not hard to find those things which can stimulate you, it's not a difficult thing to do. It's not hard, but you have to want to. If you want to be self-destructive, you're never going to find a way to keep yourself burning in that passion of existence, because you don't really want to. You just want to die, and you're using this as an excuse. So what do you have to work on? Why do you want to destroy the self? And then you can listen to all these other discussions we've had. You can think about it. You can meditate on it. What is it that makes me self-destructive? Why do I feel so bad that I should not exist? What is wrong with me? Is there anything wrong with me? Or is simply what's wrong with me is that I think there's something wrong with me? You got to work on it. Now, I'm sure this is not the answer you were expecting. In fact, you may be thinking right now, what the hell? But it is the answer, or at least it's one of them. In any case, it's a really good one, because this issue is, again, fundamental. We're at the bottom here, and that makes it important. If you want to comment on that, you can, and I'll move to another question, which I have not yet had a chance to read. This question represents the angst, represents the trauma, represents the challenge that every artist faces. The raging problem of finding your voice. It's a raging problem of finding your expression. Artists have this way more than anyone else. When one is an artist, one is to some extent a bit insane, because the expression through art is filled with so much turmoil in that every artist who's really into expression is filled with turmoil. Their insides are in turmoil a lot of the time, and art is their escape. They escape into art. They take that turmoil and plaster it on a canvas. They take their turmoil and they blast it out from speakers. They take their turmoil and sing their heart out with it. It's like the artistic expression is to just express that turmoil that's inside, or rather that need, that darkness, that expression. It's got to come out, otherwise it devours one from within. It's just historical, traditional way in which artists struggle with life. Now, the question is, while expressing myself, I see that I think like this, that now I'm singing like this artist, or now I'm playing like that artist. Not because I'm trying to, simply because it's coming out that way. Now, yeah, sure. It's not because you're not in connection to yourself. It's because expression has to have relation to the environment, to the instrument, to the... I mean, after all, if you think about it, when I play guitar, I have to move my fingers in ways in which other people do, because everybody does basically the same thing. Some people do it faster. Some people do it with more expression, more beautifully, more spectacularly. But basically, we all do the same thing. So everybody's sharing a similarity there. We use the same device, the same instrument. That instrument has frets on it. It has notes in various places due to the tuning of the thing. So we all share that. We all share certain sounds, especially guitarists. We share sounds all over the place. So there's a sharing there. We share keys. We didn't invent the keys. They're not unique to us. We share all the notes we play. They're not unique to us. So we also play in certain styles. These are also not unique to us. There's the blues mood, the jazz mood, the classical mood, the rock mood, the heavy metal mood, rap mood, blah, 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 mood, mood, mood. All different ways that we have categorized musical expressions. So, okay, from that point of view, we play different styles. Now, when you're playing a style, the uniqueness is not in the style, because you can never play uniquely a style. There's, unless you invent one, that's very rare. You have to play somebody else's style. So you're already surrendering certain uniqueness. When you boil it right down, the only uniqueness you have is your particular expression. The way you put together the notes, the way you bend them, or the way you merge from one to the other, the melody you play or whatever. But every now and then, playing something familiar is cool. It's variety. Every now and then when I'm talking, I quote somebody. It puts some spice in. It's part of the artistic expression. If everything you did was totally unique, you'd be like Pablo Picasso painting for the first time. You either would be bankrupt and end life as a pauper laying on the street because nobody could care less about what you do, or you become an icon, glorified for all time. It's the chance the artist takes. But then other people say, well, here are these, I mean, like when I play music, I know I'm playing kind of like this and kind of like that, and I'm mixing them and changing them, and sometimes I imitate a mood and get into it, but it's all within my flow and my way, and the feeling that I'm expressing is all mine, unless I really am trying to imitate some mood. But still, it's the way I feel right now when I do it. So I right now am expressing how I feel right now using the vehicle of some already existing methodology or possibility to express. I don't really care if somebody else has already said it. Do you really think it bothers me when I'm talking to you right now that someone else somewhere, even someone famous, may be saying the same thing? I already hear from all kinds of people who write me emails in the background, hey, you know what you just said in last week's lecture? This person said it last week in their channeling, or the week before in their channeling or something. Wow, cool, you're saying the same thing. Yeah, I go, yeah, wow, cool. I don't care. I don't have to be unique. I'm expressing myself to you. I may do that musically, I may do that verbally, I don't really care. The uniqueness is that I feel what I'm saying right now. So this experience is unique to me right now, because I'm me here now, in this time, in this place. So I'm expressing uniquely, because no one else but me can express in this time, in this place, but me. Because I occupy this space, I occupy this time. But if I'm not doing it with some feeling, with I'm not into it, and I'm just repeating somebody else, then I'm living their expression. I'm imitating their expression, which could be cool if I think it's cool. I could feel good doing it. Maybe not. I don't know. So you have to see things in this way. And I think you should be fine with it, whatever you're doing, just as long as you feel connected to the expression. And if you feel it actually expresses you, you don't have to be unique. If it expresses you, that's fine. If your expression is shared by others, so what? You don't like to share? But you're not sharing yourself with them in that way. You're just sharing the way in which you wish to express. That's all. You both do it the same way. You're not even sharing it. You're simply expressing it in a way which is similar to them. So what? I don't see any problem with it whatsoever. It's natural that there will be similarities, because we are basically similar. It's natural that there will be overlapping, because we basically are one. There is one of us. And in that oneness of us, there is similarity. We make an us, and so we share energy. We exchange energy. We pass energy back and forth between us as we make this one of us. And we're fine with it. You don't have to be a unique somebody who's totally different than everyone else to be recognized as a person who can express the self. Okay, now there's a feedback from another artist who says that if they could create something original, I would like it very much, because it would be harmonious with me, who I am, this originality of who I am. Yes, yeah, sure, of course. I'm not saying you can't do something original. I'm not saying you can't be unique. Of course you can. But don't expect that uniqueness to be an exclusive difference to everyone else. That you will play a different style, you will play a different way, you will play different everything. The uniqueness is not necessarily related to an exclusivity. They may be original in the way they express it, but they don't demand exclusivity. They feel good that they're doing it with others, but they're very originally expressing themselves. And that's fine. When you speak about originality, that word is very important. Because I say that word is very similar to expression of self, because that's original, because it's yourself. It's not original when it comes from someone else, when you're living someone else's life. So when you're actually expressing self, that's fine. But when you're living someone else's life, then that's not original. Then you're living their life. And that's not great for an artist, not at all. I have heard musicians who are simply playing somebody else. Depending on who they are, that may or may not work. Some who do it with such a passion, who likes what they're doing so much, who loves it. It's very unique. You don't even think about the originator of it. You think about the present expression, and that's what's original, the energy they put into it, the passion they put into it, the sensuality they put into it. Whoa, this is a whole thing, and I'm kind of running out of energy. Here's a comment I'll just read before I get into this other thing. What is interesting is that the persons who bring to the world some original styles and unique types of expressions, these founders, are not always very evolved. Some of them are drug takers or whatever. I don't know how that would be significantly relevant to their evolution in that particular way. I mean, that's a very complex issue. Look at Jimi Hendrix. Look at Miles Davis. Everybody knows these two characters. They were taking all kinds of various drugs of various kinds. Incredible innovation, incredible originality. They were seeing their art and they were using things to help them expand their originality in their art. I'm not very interested in that. I mean, I would never do that for myself because I don't feel that the connection to self is the same. You may passionately create something fabulous, but at what cost? At what cost to self is it worth it? Is it valuable to you to express something extremely unique like that? I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it. And I don't even know if what you are expressing. Jimi Hendrix, perfect example. This guy was so insanely creative. He invented the entirety of psychedelic music, which is a misnomer. He was the father of everything, for example, even that me and Shiva are doing now. He was the originator of expression. Really, honestly, truly intense expression, blowing out all of the barriers. And I mean, this is common knowledge. But at the same time, he went to Miles Davis, the reason why I mentioned the two, and he said, I don't feel good about what I'm doing. He said, I don't like it. I want to do big band stuff like Otis Redding. And Miles Davis looked at him and said, and he also said, Jimi Hendrix also said that, I want to be able to play with you guys, like you guys play with the jazz and the things that Miles Davis was doing, the third stream jazz, the innovative, the mood, you play moods, you just play moments. And Miles Davis looked at him and said, are you crazy? You are the father of psychedelic music. In other words, Miles Davis is looking at him and saying, you're an icon. He's probably thinking, for all time to come, everything's referencing to you. And you think you should be this, which is so common? He was looking at him and saying, you are the epitome of originality and creation, and here you want to do something which is common? So here we go. Here's a guy who wasn't satisfied with self. He wasn't self-satisfied. And even though he was the most unique, nobody, I mean nobody, was even close. The most unique of the unique. another universe of unique, was not satisfied with his expression. What can you do? It all boils down to the self and self-satisfaction. He was not satisfied with the self. So all the expression was not expression of self. And I would say, from that point of view, it may not have been inspiring to him. And now we go to this other point again. Why is it some things inspire us when we're in certain kinds of energies and we're in certain kinds of company on other persons? We are inspired. We feel the inspiration. And when we're not, we don't feel it. Why is it? Hey, it's because we are individuals. We vibrate in a certain way. And when our frequency is met and resonates with the frequency of other, it just is. It's not like it can be otherwise. It just is. But if you only think there's one person that you can resonate like that, that's wrong. You just have to keep seeking, searching. You'll find more. Maybe not the same. If you think it has to be the same exact experience, you're making a mistake. But there'll be resonance. That the resonance is a little different is healthy. It helps you grow. So seek it out. There's nothing wrong with it, but it all boils down to how individuals resonate. There are people I resonate super well with. There are people I don't resonate well with at all. It's just the nature of resonance. It's the nature of frequencies. It's the nature of what we are. Don't worry about it. And if you want company, find it. Don't just say, I only get it there and nowhere else. Yeah, I should get a mirror and talk to myself, because musically, I only find inspiration when I play with Shiva. You know, if I don't even feel like going out anywhere else. I wouldn't even know how, because I'm doing other things. I'm busy too. I don't work with it. And, you know, the distances in this town I live in are insane. You know, to go visit somebody, you got to drive like 15 miles. That's like 20 kilometers just to go visit somebody. And I know in Sweden, the distance between Oxia, where we lived, and Malmo was 8 kilometers. And I used to consider that a long drive. 8 kilometers in Gainesville gets you to some store somewhere. If you want to go visit people, you're talking 20 kilometers. And how am I going to, you know, and anyway, I don't, everybody's young. Listen to me now, huh? Listen to this. It's valuable. Everybody's young. They're into different kinds of music. They don't know me. I don't know them. And I can't play like they play. And I don't want to do chords and songs and have to read music and all that junk and go play in a club with smoke in it and young kids drinking in it. And it's not my thing. You got to balance it. You got to figure it out. You got to do what you want, how you want. It is not self-destructive to seek it out. It is self-destructive to say it's only in that one place and I can't have that one place. And therefore I feel bad. I deal with not having people to play music with by not playing music. I do something else that I feel that passion about. I go into nature, or I go to the beach, or I do something that I feel good about. I have a talk with somebody. I've had a lot of them lately. It's been nice. So, seek it out. Don't just give up.